Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at orchids. It's time for our, well, we at least do an annual show on orchids. And Chuck Aker is often the person who does this program with us. He's a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, produces new hybrids for sale to commercial growers as well as to home hobbyists. His business is called Flasks by Chuck. And as we talk with him about orchids, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have an orchid, maybe you want to get some orchids, or maybe you have a question about the orchid that's sitting in the corner of the house and not blooming, or maybe there may be some sort of disease associated with it, or maybe it's looking great. Whatever, I hope you'll join in with your comments and maybe your questions as well. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Chuck Aker, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Hey, thank you, Larry. It's great to be here in your new studio as well.
Well, I tell you what, the new studio, but both of us have been around a long time.
Yes, we have.
And you have been in orchids all your life, right?
Yes, I had the good fortune of being brought up in my family's orchid growing business of Orchids by the Acres, which they started, well, they actually didn't start. The history of it goes way back to the late 1930s, actually, when an area doctor here in Madison was growing orchids as a hobby, and he had a little land on the north shore of Lake Mendota, not too far from my grandpa's farm. And he had a collection there going, and I ended up needing some help and came over to my grandpa's farm and asked grandpa if he could get a couple of the boys to help him around his property and on his orchids. So he had my dad, Walter, and my uncle, Paul, and they came over and started helping Dr. Schubert with his orchid collection there. And one thing led to another and another, and Dr. Schubert soon ran out of space on his little spot there on the North Shore, and he came over to my grandpa once again and asked if he could buy a parcel of land, and grandpa sold him 20 acres, and he started building the greenhouse complex in 1948, and every year or so after that, they put up another greenhouse, ended up finishing that in 1959. They ended up with just about a 40,000 square foot orchid growing range with eight different greenhouses, different climates, and so on. And Doc Schubert had an uncanny ability of importing orchids from all over the world, so he soon had that place full. And at that time, it was mainly for a cut flower business where we were producing orchids as, you know, cut flowers for the corsage and floral market. Then 1963, tragedy, Doc Schubert passed away, and that's when my father, you know, stepped in as he was his right-hand man all those years, and they stepped in and purchased the business estate from the Schubert family and turned it into Orchids by the Acres and ran with that, and my sister ended up owning it, and so we have a long, long history of orchid growing there in Wanakee.
And now your business is Flasks by Chuck, and I always ask this, I think, what do flasks have to do with orchids?
Yeah, you get that a lot. It's an interesting thing because orchids actually need to be germinated in a vitro culture solution, which is totally a sterile environment inside of a sterilized vessel, and the vessels are just commonly known as flasks, and they come in different types and shapes. Some of them are old milk bottles laying on their side, glass. Some of them are plastic deli containers. So they're various different things, but the orchid seed is a very different seed in the respects to, it's not like a corn seed or something you could refer to that, you know, is your typical seed. Orchid does not have any endosperm around the embryo, so that reason it needs to be germinated in a nutrient-rich agar solution, and that has to be done in a sterile situation. So the seed is sown under these laminar flow hoods into these what they call mother flasks with this media, so to speak, that's rich in all the nutrients that takes to germinate orchids, and they start their life out in there. It's not like you just throw the seed down on the dirt and then voila, you got a plant. So,
well, and I was on your site, flasksbychuckacre.com, and looking at a couple of the Fu Manchu orchid, that really struck me. I love that particular orchid. That was the result of, I'm sure, that was in the flask at one point.
Yeah, they start out in the flask. They spend a good year or more sometimes in the germination process and the replate process is what they call it. It's a slow go, and from that point to getting a blooming plant is anywhere from 3 to 5 or even 7 or more years. So it's a slow process. It does not happen quick.
Now, it was a long time ago that I was in high school, and my girlfriend at the time, Anne Marie, wanted an orchid for a prom. And it was I remember I had to work some extra hours to make the money to buy that orchid corsage for Anne.
Yeah.
I think the price then, which was a long time ago, probably isn't a whole lot of different than the price today, which would make it relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the big things with our business, producing these flowers, putting them out on the wholesale market for, 50 cents a piece back in the day, and, watching those prices go up and the florists would charge more. And, as of today, corsages really aren't that overly priced anymore. That actually is going to be a little bit of a resurgence in the orchid corsage market as of late. We're seeing people using more of the smaller types of orchids like dendrobium and small phalaenopsis orchids for the corsages and boutonnieres nowadays. So back in the day, it was mostly the Cattleya, and those big flowers, and it took, they only bloomed once a year, and you didn't get a lot of flowers off the plant, so Subsequently there was a higher price range there, but they're still around. I'm actually doing a program at Orchid Quest on the Orchid Corsage Renaissance, and that'll be done on Sunday at noon.
As long as you mentioned it, let's talk about the Orchid Quest, which is really a fun experience to visit and see.
Yeah, definitely. You'd see a plethora of different kinds of orchids at these shows. I highly recommend it. Coming out, Olbrich Gardens, February 4th, 10 to 4. Sunday, February 5th, 10 to 3. It's free. I mean, there's no fee to park or no fee to get admitted. We have all kinds of things going on out there this season. We had a two-year absence, and so everybody's very excited to be back into this. So we've got plant vendors obviously selling their orchids of many different types. We've got supply vendors selling the bark, the pots, and various other things you'll need. There's raffles and auctions going on. There's free seminars both days. Saturday at 11:30, I have an open forum seminar that just basically a walk-in question and answer thing, and I just absolutely love doing that. Obviously, that's probably one of my favorite things. 12:30, we have one of the Orchid Grower Guild members, Terry Joswiak, doing an orchid repotting demonstration, and she'll have instructions and hands-on things going there. 1:30, we have Jeff Bayless, Professor Emeritus of UW-Madison. He's doing a really, really neat program on sex and the singular orchid, which is really interesting. Another one of my favorite topics, and he'll show how some of these orchid species, how they have select pollinators. And it's just really, really cool to see how the orchid does, trick some of these insects and various things to get pollinated. 2:30, we have another open discussion with 3 Orchid Grower Guild members, Gary Lensmeyer, Lorraine Schneider, and a fairly new member, Jeff Metcalf. And I might add, Jeff is an amazing grower, and he comes from Dubuque, Iowa, and he joined our club, Orchid Growers Guild, just recently, and he's bringing a lot of great things to the club. So that's going to be an open forum. And then Sunday, we also have At noon, I'm going to be doing the Orchid Corsage Renaissance program. And then at 1, we have our own Dr. Ken Cameron. He's professor of botany and director of the Wisconsin State Herbarium. He's got a really amazing program as well. I've sat in on this because he did it for our club. Orchid Conservation and Climate Change in the Upper Midwest. And he'll explain how some of these species are being affected by climate change and what is happening with them. And one of the other things that's really new this year is we've got a Kids Corner. It's going to be run by Madison Girl Scout Troop 8268, and we're hosting a variety of different activities for ages 3 to 15. We're going to have an orchid scavenger hunt, sort orchids by color or shape, coloring, games. There'll be ribbons for the winners. This is going to run Saturday and Sunday during the whole show. And there'll also be orchid face painting for the youngsters on Saturday at 11 to 2. So that'll be really cool to get a little orchid painted on your kids. So bring the kids to it. It's a great event, and you can just get into the nice warm tropics and smell those orchids blooming all over. So it's a fun event.
That's the thing I loved about going there. I mean, the sights and smells, and it smells so wonderful. And I almost defy you to go there and not walk out with an orchid.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be pretty hard to do. And there's not a lot of places to buy various types of orchids, you know, anymore since our business has closed up. I mean, you can find Phalaenopsis orchids pretty much all over, which are great. I highly recommend Phalaenopsis as a starter orchid for most people. And even if you don't really grow orchids and be successful with them reflowering, you get a Phalaenopsis orchid, you get it in a fresh state of flowering, and that thing is going to bloom in your house for 2, 3, 4 months at a crack, sometimes even longer. And you don't have any other indoor tropical blooming plant that will rival that of a Phalaenopsis orchid.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Chuck. Chuck Aker, breeder of Phragmopedium orchids. He produces new hybrids. We're talking with him about orchid growing and, of course, about the Orchid Quest that is coming up the first weekend of February, as he was talking about. And we had some problems with our phone lines. Our phone lines were down, but I think they're up now. So I'll give you the number to call if you have a question. And I noticed that there were people trying to get on. So we'll let you get in right now. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or if you want, you can also email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And maybe you want to post a photo of your orchid, or maybe you've got an orchid that's having a problem. We'd love to see that as well at ideas@wpr.org. Well, Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at orchids, growing them. We'll talk about Orchid Quest. We've been talking about that a bit with our guest, Chuck Aker, who is a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, produces new hybrids. He's got some beautiful work, and his website, I was just on it, flasksbychuckaker.com. And Aker, by the way, is spelled A-C-K-E-R. A lot of people want to use the normal Aker word, but you got to add a K in there, A-C-K-E-R as well. So, again, call in 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Linda in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about, I have two orchid plants that one of them was given to me, the other one we bought. They're small orchids. They were blooming they were gorgeous. And like you said, for a very long time. But now they just don't want to bloom. And some of the stems or, you know, the main stem, got brown, and one of our friends is really good with orchids and said to cut those down, and I did. But they're getting those things that look like spider legs. They have several of those, and they've got new leaves, but no blooms. So what can I do?
All right. You're probably not the only one, Linda, who's had this issue. Chuck's got a big smile on his face, Chuck.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. Yeah, well, I'm assuming you have the Phalaenopsis orchid there by the way you described how long it bloomed and, you know, the browns.
Well, I'm not sure. There isn't a little sticker in there, but, yeah, they're the smaller blooms. They're not the great big huge ones.
Yeah, yeah, you might have more of the miniature or what they call the multifloral type of Phalaenopsis. Yeah, what you have there, you have the, you know, the air roots are crawling around. You're thinking they're the spidery-looking things, and that's very common for orchids. They have a very active air root system, so it's nice to accommodate those a little bit with doing a little misting on them once in a while, especially now with the heating season going. You know, when you water the orchid, you want to make sure that you're watering those roots as well as what's in the pot. You know, get everything nice and soaked, and you'll actually see those roots change color a little bit from the fleshy silvery white color that they are when they're dry to more of a darker green after they have soaked up their moisture, because that root is basically like a sponge. Back to your question about how to get it to reflower, you know, cut those old bloom spikes off that you have on there, the old flower, you know, shoot that was there that you said turned brown. Just go ahead, cut it off down by the plant. And what the Phalaenopsis is really going to respond to get it to reflower is a cooler nighttime temperature. Sometimes you have to physically move the plant to a different room where you feel it's a little cooler at night. Setting it on a floor versus up on a table, a few degrees difference. Sometimes getting it a little closer to the window where you get that emitting cold at night. Those are the triggers. So you want to shoot for something like 58 degree night temperature. About a month or 6 weeks of that, and you should see the new flower spike starting to protrude out of the base of the plant there. And once you see that, you can go ahead and move it back to where you're currently growing it or had it. They do like a lot of light, too, so make sure that you're giving your orchids, you know, a good bright location, not necessarily hot direct sun, but as bright as you can without damaging the leaves from the sunburn. You know, typically sitting right smack dab in an east or a west window is good. Set it off to the side of a south window is great. But, you know, giving them a lot of light and getting them all charged up really, really helps.
Linda, does that help?
It definitely helps. I just want to say the leaves, it's getting new leaves and they look beautiful. But hopefully I'll do what you said and hopefully that will work. One other short question. How often should I be watering them and how much water?
Well, do you know, is it growing in a bark-based mix or is it in the spongy sphagnum moss type of mix? The bark-based mixes are usually like a more of a chunky type of product, you know, like small chunks of fir bark. And the moss is just a spongy moss typical.
I think it might be the spongy moss kind.
Okay. Great. Then you'll want to wait till that moss gets just dry to the touch at the surface. And if you can pick the pot up and touch the bottom drain hole where the moss is poking out there a little bit, you want to get that a little bit dry to the touch too. The main thing with orchids is to get them to dry out slightly between their waterings. Overwatering and too much water sitting in water, those are really common mistakes and they'll rot the roots. It sounds like to me, if your plant is making new leaf like that, that your culture is obviously good. So moss plants, usually you probably water about every 2 weeks, sometimes, you know, a longer interval. Bark-based pots, usually once a week. But nevertheless, you want them to thoroughly dry out. And if you wanted to go on the Orchid Growers Guild website, which is orchidgrowersguild.org, we have posted care sheets there that I have recently updated with the help of another guild member who helped me edit. And we've got some really, really concise growing instructions for many, many of the commonly grown orchids, in, you know, for the Wisconsin climate. And I mean, it's specifically written for us here in our upper Midwestern climate. So check that out.
So it's orchidgrowersguild.org?
Correct.
We'll post that. Jill will post that, put that up on our Larry Mueller show. Today's date, ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Go to today's date and we'll have it up there as well. But just you can just remember, orchidgrowersguild.org.
Yes.
Linda, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Jane in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi there. This is so apt because I'm repotting my orchids right now. And the question is, what is the best? I know you mentioned moss or the typical bark, but are there, I'd heard and used something called a, like a coconut, shredded coconut bark.
Yeah, yeah, the cocoa fiber, they call it. To be honest with you, the easiest thing to work with for most people is a bark-based mix. It's just easy to plant with and easy to get around the roots and so on. The moss is an okay product to use, but it's a little bit different when it comes to actually doing the physical repotting and how to get it in the pot properly and the right firmness and, you know, where it's supposed to be around the roots, because it just doesn't fall into place like bark-based mixes do. I am a huge proponent of bark-based mixes, and best bark types that are out there right now is called Orchiata. And it's, you can find it online. You can get it here in Madison from Paradigm Gardens. Just a small bag of that. And the properties of that are just so easy to use. You just basically pull it out of the bag and dump it right into the pot. You don't have to mix anything with it. And it's a very, very good orchid bark these days. And we kind of discovered that back 10 years ago already in production that the orchids love this type of pine bark mix. So I'd highly recommend to use that. It'll make your job a lot easier and your plant will be a lot happier.
Yeah. Jane, that okay with you?
that sounds great. And in repotting, while I'm doing it now, should I wash off the old material from the roots? Is it a good thing to kind of clean them off and start over, get rid of the whatever's dead in the roots, or just sort of let it be if it looks okay?
Yeah, when you pull the plant out of the pot, you know, just let the old mix that's there, that's, you know, just let it fall away. Don't wash the roots and clean things up too good, because there's a huge symbiotic relationship with that root and that old mix. And if you strip that away, the plant has to restart all this symbiotic fungi relationship again, so it kind of stresses the plants. So leave a little bit of the old stuff around, clean up the dead roots, but don't take, you know, everything away, and don't wash it for sure.
Now, what if Jane is like me and breaks off one of those roots in the process? You don't want to do that, but what if it happens?
Yeah, it's pretty much inevitable when you're handling the orchid root, because they are kind of brittle. They have an interesting structure to them. The outside part of the root is called the velamen, and that's the spongy part that actually holds the water. And then inside there is a real wiry cord-like substance, which is actually the root itself. If you happen to break one and it, you know, breaks in half and comes apart in two pieces, it's no problem. It's going to start a new root shoot off that broken area. If you have some that you've actually broken and they're not severed into two pieces, sometimes that's best to actually get that cut and clean it up, because that half that's broken is more than likely going to decompose once it's put in the pot. So, but it's inevitable to not break them.
Is it, I mean, if you're working with a bark-based mix like Orchiata, would you water the roots beforehand? Would that help prevent, or would that just add to the problems if those roots were watered beforehand?
That's a really good point, Larry. I often address that with people that have plants that they're struggling getting out of the pot or have a lot of air roots shooting around, because when the root is dry, it is very brittle and not very flexible and pliable. So, yes, watering that plant, you know, some hours before that you're going to want to work with, that allows that root to soak up some moisture, and it becomes way more flexible and pliable, and you can maneuver it around a little bit without having that propensity of snapping in half. So good point.
Jane, does that help?
Oh, that was great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Joshua emailed to ask for your advice for growing a vanilla orchid
since it's a vining orchid.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to talk about. Dr. Ken Cameron here, our own guild member too, he has actually written a book about vanilla orchid, which is really interesting. I mean, he's traveled around the world, but yeah, you can start the vanilla. It is a vining orchid, and get it going on some type of wooden trellis or totem or something like that. I've seen people use chicken wire. They'll make a little column out of that and pack it with sphagnum moss. You know, the thing gets started on that, and the roots come out of that vining section of the plant, and the roots will come out and just go right in there and crawl itself around, and then it'll get to the top, and it'll reach out a couple of feet, but you just kind of let it fall back down and get to the bottom and start over and let it wind back up or wind it around. Vanilla is just a riot to grow. Once you get about 10 feet of vine or so, they should start to flower if you're giving them enough light.
Hmm. I had Ken Cameron on the show to talk about about his book and about vanilla and vanilla orchids. He's a really interesting guy.
He's really been an asset to our guild, and he's really fun to listen to when he does programs. He's incredibly intelligent with his material, obviously, and I loved his book. Back when we were in business, we had quite a collection of vanilla orchids that we were growing at the greenhouse and selling, and people just loved it. You know, even if they never got them to reflower or anything, they just loved having it and knowing they got a vanilla orchid, you know. And so Ken was pretty cool with that too. He came out and bought a couple of different species from us and stuff, and it was great. He's a great guy.
So before we, I think we got Becky coming up with a question, but before we get to that, you grow Phragmopedium orchids. How are they different from other orchids, and why do you grow them?
Well, they're different in respects that they're a South American slipper orchid, and they're found mainly in Peru and Ecuador, a couple of parts of Central America. There's a few Mexican and, you know, through that area. I fell in love with the Phragmopedium back when I was just out of high school, when I saw one of my first ones flower that was in our collection, and I was like, wow, this is really something. And they're similar to the Paphiopedilum, which is the Asian lady slipper, but what's different about the Phragmopedium is you've got these various sized flowers in these different colors, and their pouches are just round and puffy, and some are large flowers, some are incredibly small flowers. They're sequential flowering, which means when that stem starts to produce, it's going to continue to produce flowers in sequence one after another. They'll bloom for up to 6 months, if not more, at a time. And they're easy to grow for the most part. I mean, in the home or the greenhouse, they grow fast. So for production, we had a riot doing that. We'd bloom those things, you know, in 3 years from a flask, which is, you know, pretty quick for orchid terms. I just fell in love with them, and I took that and I started breeding and making hybrids and buying, you know, various stud plants from around the world. And one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I'm like this world-renowned Phragmopedium breeder that I really didn't think I'd end up being. But so, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, now let's go to Becky and Ryo. Becky, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Chuck. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Phalaenopsis that has bloomed up fairly regularly, but the last couple times I haven't had much luck training the blossom stalk to go straight up. They seem so rigid. I have a pole in there that came with it that should hold it up straight, but how do I train it to get back there when it's so rigid?
Yeah, well, you know, you kind of get a little anxious with trying to do that thing. It's, to be honest with you, just let the thing sit in the window and don't move it around. If you turn it and stuff, you obviously, they're phototropic, so they're going to reach for the light, so you're going to get this stem that goes back and forth. Just let it grow up to the point where the buds are just starting to form. Even if the stem is kind of growing sideways a little bit, let it get to at least the part where you got the first bud starting to show on the stem, and then start slowly bringing that stem up with, you know, a piece of string and tie it, pull it a little bit one day, you know, pull it a little bit more the next day, take it in slow increments to where you want to get it to where it's vertical. And then the rest of it will develop where the flower buds are will start to develop into a small arch, you know, a short arch and, you know, arch over like you typically see them. But I think what people do a lot of times is they get anxious, and as soon as that stem comes out and starts shooting towards the window, they want to bring it up. Just let it go.
So should you turn the pot then, Chuck?
No, because the stem is phototropic, meaning that it's going to reach for the light. So if you've got one reaching out towards the window and you turn that around 180 degrees, it's going to want to reach back. So then you're going to have this S curve in your stem. And if you turn it around again, it'll go the other way. And
so you can corkscrew.
Yeah, you can make some origami going there, but not recommended. But yeah, the thing is just kind of let it take its course, you know, until the buds are just starting to form, and then, you know, start slowly working the stem up with, you know, retying it every few days.
Cheryl emailed to ask if are there any small orchids that do well as part of either an open or a closed terrarium that you know of?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, the orchid family, you know, being the world's largest flowering plant family with species found on every continent in the world except the Antarctica, there are orchids for that, for sure. You can get into the things like the Pleurothallis, the smaller growing Mazdevallias and Draculas. And there's miniature species and hybrids in amongst those species all over the place. And you just do a little bit of internet searching and question some of the growers that are out there in this country, you know, send them some messages, look at their plant listings and so on. But yeah, there's just tons of things. And, you know, back in the day, there was always a real surgence in what's called the orchidarium, which was just basically a terrarium set up with a light and a little fan in there. It was just a little kit you buy, and people would just fill those with small plants. So some of them were mounted, some of them were growing, you know, terrestrially in some mix that they put at the base of the thing. And so there's just a ton of things. You do some internet searching and you'll be surprised what you find.
Chuck Aker, our guest today, talking with him about orchid growing. We're also talking about Orchid Quest. He was talking about the event that takes place at Olbrich Gardens on the 4th and 5th, or is it the 5th and 6th?
The 4th and 5th, yeah.
4th and 5th at Olbrich Gardens in Madison. Always a wonderful event, and I've spent a little money there one time,
it's a great fun.
One time or another, and a really cool event. When the roots start climbing out of the pot, is that when it's time to? That's probably when it's time to get a bigger pot.
Well, not or necessarily. Not. Yeah, that's a trick. You know, people get excited about that. The orchid does have a very active air root system, and that means it's happy. It is indicative in some cases that it needs repotting, obviously, but they'll shoot out of that pot, you know, 4, 5, 6 months after a fresh repot. You'll see something crawling out one of the bottom drain holes or crawling out the top there or over the top of the mix, whatever you're using, bark or moss, because they do have an active air root system. Most of those orchids are growing as epiphytes in nature, so they're up on the trees and stuff. They're not terrestrial. There are many terrestrial types, but a lot of the orchids we culture in our houses these days, like Phalaenopsis and Cattleyas, Dendrobiums, and so on, they're all epiphytes, so they love that, to crawl the roots around like that. Some of the things that are telling you the plant needs repotting is if the plant is just physically just solid root-bound, obviously, and then other things are if it's reaching out over the edge of the pot, like some of the plants that have rhizomes, and they'll crawl around on top of the pot, and then all of a sudden, whoops, the plant is outside the perimeter of the pot. That's always a good thing to see when it's, you know, ready to be repotted as well.
And do you go just like the next size up with a pot, or what do you do?
Yeah, it's really all about the root system. You pull it out of the pot, and of course, if it is really jam-packed with good, healthy roots, that's the time you go up a pot size or two. They do like to be crowded, you know, so don't overpot them too much. There's a lot of times where you'll pull the plant out and the root system isn't great. Bark or mix might have, you know, broken down. Roots are starting to rot a little bit. You might go back into the same size pot. Sometimes even go down a size if you want to try to recoup, you know, the plant, you know, headed south a little bit. But yeah, it's you don't want to overpot them. That's the real key.
And why, you know, what's wrong with putting it in a great big pot?
Well, you see that the roots stay wet too long in between waterings. Again, most of these plants being epiphytes, they want to dry out fairly quickly between their watering cycles. So it's a, you know, a wet, dry cycle that, you know, can happen within, you know, a week or less. So the larger pots, you know, once they're watered, that media around those roots is going to stay wet for quite some time. And the roots will get lazy, as I call it, and languish. They won't be searching for moisture as well. And it, you know, it brings in fungus, bacteria, things just start to rot. I mean, if you know that, you just water a little bit less. You know, don't pour tons of water on that pot and saturate the whole thing. There are ways of getting around that, but it's, generally speaking, try to keep your orchids, you know, crowded as possible. They'd love that.
Speaking of watering, Gloria emailed us and wonders, is it okay to use ice cubes to water orchids?
Yeah, there's a company that was marketing the Phalaenopsis, justaddiceorchids.com. I don't know if they're still out there or not, but they had a system where their pot size and their mix type and the plants that they were using, they had this little instruction to put 3 ice cubes on it once a week. And it worked, you know, believe it or not. I don't advocate it, but it does work. You know, that's one of these things. It's, you got to try it. And if it's not working, try something different. And if it is, you know, don't change.
Yeah, whatever is working, don't.
Yeah, that's the key.
A lot of times people have, they'll have a nice looking plant and then they'll, but they will call sometimes the show, be it an orchid or something else, and they'll say, but I'd like to even, it's so good right now, but I, is there some way I could make it better? No.
If it's not broke, you can't fix it. And that's the thing. Orchids, too, you know, they do thrive a little bit more on neglect. You know, you start pampering and, you know, babying the thing. You know, you got to look at how these orchids are in nature. And, you know, it's amazing that they even survive at all, much less reproduce. But, yeah, I've always promoted that. Orchids thrive on neglect. Don't baby it.
Tam in Waukesha has a question for you. Let's go there. Tam, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have several orchids, and the air roots are just completely outside the pot. I mean, there's good root systems plus all these air roots, but they're real long stems. When I repot, can I bury some of those air roots?
Yes, by all means you can. And like I said earlier in the program, make sure that you moisten those roots prior to trying to work with them, because I'm assuming they're going to be a bit stiff and rigid. So if you get them moistened a couple hours or so before you want to work with it, you'll find that they're going to be much more pliable and apt to be, you know, maneuvered around and put into the pot without, you know, breaking them off. And, you know, that's not the worst thing either. But you try to salvage as many as you can. And yes, get them in the pot to the best of your ability and cover them up, you know, get it covered up with your mix of choice. And, yeah, more will crawl out. And next 6 months or so, you'll see it all over again.
So you would bury them all, Chuck? Or?
Yeah, typically you try to get as many of those air roots into the media as you can. There is, you know, a propensity for people to actually put the plant itself a little bit too low into the pot during the transplanting process, especially Phalaenopsis. You really don't want to bury what's called the crown, the center of it where the leaves are joined and coming out of. You want to kind of show a little bit of that because the new roots are going to want to come out over the top, over the mix from there. Phalaenopsis have a tendency to get what's called crown rot. So if you get the plant buried too deep, that just kind of promotes that. So
there you go. Tam, does that help?
They're all in bud now. Do I wait till they are finished blooming before repotting?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, indeed. Don't mess with them if they're making a flower spike or budding or blooming. Yeah, wait till you're completely done with your flowering period. This time of the year isn't the greatest time to repot anyway, unless you have really controlled environment, like you're growing under lights in a, you know, controlled area, because we have such dark, short days yet, and you repot at the wrong time of the year, orchids are going to be really bummed at you. So typically you want to repot after the flowering period is completed, and if that coincides with spring, summer, early fall, That's great. My model was always to repot your orchids between the spring equinox and the fall equinox, and that's a really safe position as the plants are generally in active growing states, not flowering. Our days are longer, brighter. Sometimes you can put them outside then for the varieties that like to be summered outdoors. So that's really a good rule to follow.
Yeah, and I tell you what, these last few weeks, it seems like we hardly ever see the sun.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
In southern Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's been tough. I notice on my collection, I'm way behind on bloom time. I have about 400 Phragmopedium orchids, and I was hoping to be able to put many of them in exhibit at Orchid Quest next weekend, but it's kind of slim pickings. haven't had a lot of light, so things are slow.
Things are a bit slow, but they're not slow right here on the show. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Chuck Aker, breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, and he produces new hybrids as well. And always fun to have him come by to talk about orchids and the Orchid Quest event that goes on at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison on February 4th and 5th. It's a free event that you may want to participate in. We'll talk some more about it. But Marilyn in South Range has a question for us, so let's go there. Marilyn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My son-in-law used to live in San Francisco, and he had his landlord who encouraged me to take some of his epidendrum orchids.
Yep.
I had them flowering once, and I'd take them in the winter, of course, and put them outside in the screen porch in the summer. And they flowered, and it was so pretty. They're, you know, the small, little, teeny flowers that
mm-hmm.
they have.
Yes, yes.
But I have not had any luck to get them to flower again. Now, maybe I'm not fertilizing them at the right time or whatever.
Yeah. You'll want to fertilize pretty regularly throughout the year. I highly doubt if that's your issue. The epidendrum likes a lot of light. That, you know, where it was growing out in San Francisco, he probably had it out in his yard all the time, in practically full sun. They are light-loving orchids, so find your absolute brightest, sunniest window, which has been kind of hard this last month, while you're indoors, and then while it's outdoors, it wants to be outside for the, you know, spring, summer, early fall, and you can condition that plant to take almost full sun in Wisconsin, even if you have the right spot. The thing with giving them a lot of light while they're outside like that is you don't want to put them in the corner or someplace where the air is still, because that's actually what will burn the leaves. It's not necessarily the sun rays itself. It's the heat that the sun is building up. So if there's good air moving around that plant, they just love, that epidendrum just loves a lot of light. So try to accommodate that and see what happens.
It brings to mind lighting. You know, we've talked about low light conditions. Is it useful to have, bring in some light?
Yeah, indeed it is. And nowadays the artificial light technology has just leaps and bounds every 6 months, it seems like. There was a member that came to one of our Orchid Grower Guild meetings a couple of months ago, and I do not know exactly the brand of light that he had. He plugged that thing in, and the whole room just lit up. And those are the kinds of lights that you can use for orchid growing. Depending upon how many plants you have, you can get some of these lights for $60, and they're LEDs, they're low energy usage, incredibly bright with the correct wavelengths and rays that orchids will really go nuts over. Again, depending on the amount of plants you want to light, you can spend all the way up to $300 or $400 for a light that'll light up a 10 by 12 room. So that's really advantageous. And you can go with simpler things, too, to supplement light, just your typical fluorescent grow lights that are T8s or T5s with, you know, a full-spectrum bulb in it, which are really inexpensive, and they're not expensive to run. So that all really helps with these high light-loving orchids.
Marilyn, does that help?
I have it right now. I have it in a south-facing basement window that gets a lot of light, and it's on top of a hot tub, so it would get a lot of moisture when it was used.
Yeah, good. Is it warm down there? Is it a?
It is relatively warm in the at least the 60s. It's a we're in a split entry,
mm-hmm.
so therefore, it's only 4 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, yeah, because you know, on top of being a light lover, they like it warm too. It's That's a fun plant to grow if you've got the condition for it. That's for sure. They're long blooming. They make a ton of flowers. They come in some really great colors now, yellows, reds. It's really fun plant.
Marilyn, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Corey in Campbellsport will go to you next. Hi, Corey.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. Enjoying the show. I just heard you mention the Orchid Growers Guild. What a wonderful thing a guild is. I belong to the Piano Technicians Guild, and so I can appreciate the network of professionals that you get to have the conversations about.
Yeah,
and it's
so
valuable.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm very much a novice and just enjoying your show. What would you recommend for someone for just starting out and trying their first orchid? A variety that you would maybe recommend for that, and would it be a already established plant, cutting or a seed?
Oh yeah, well, definitely the Phalaenopsis orchid, which you can find in a lot of places nowadays, grocery stores, and you know they're the mainstay orchid, and because they are, it is that they grow so well in our home. They like what we like. They like the temperature ranges that we live with. They're not typically high light orchids, so you know the east, the west window. And when you purchase these, they're fully grown, mature plants in flower. Everything's already been done for you. All you have to do is take it home, you know, find the right spot for it, and enjoy it, flower it. You know, follow some of the directions. Again, looking at the Orchid Growers Guild website, and you know, reading about the instructions for growing Phalaenopsis here in the Upper Midwest. You can learn little tidbits of information there. They bloom a long time. You just can't beat the Phalaenopsis. It gets you wet, you know, it gets you going. And a lot of people will get one of those, and all of a sudden they're hooked. They get another one. They'll start branching out into other varieties that are similar, like Paphiopedilums, Phragmopediums, different kinds of Dendrobiums. It just depends upon your light level and, you know, how much you want to put into it and so on. Yeah, but the Phalaenopsis, you'll find those. There'll be plenty of them at the orchid show if you happen to come out, and they're definitely all over. There's one thing I would mention, though, when you're buying one during the winter like this from the grocery store, big box stores and stuff, you know, make sure you get the thing wrapped up adequately before you walk out to your car with it, because that's not something they're real good at.
Yeah. And you can purchase one at the Orchid Growers Guild. There certainly will be orchids available at the guild. And there, I know, having purchased myself, they always wrap them well.
Yes.
And so that's very, very important.
Yes, it is.
And once again, for those who may have tuned in a little late, the Orchid Growers Guild Orchid Quest is coming up on February 4th and 5th. And what does it run, 10 in the morning to?
Yeah, it's 10 to 4 on Saturday and 10 to 3 on Sunday. Olbrich, you know, closes their doors at 4 o'clock on Sundays. So, you know, we have to have time to, you know, get everything packed up and all the vendors and all the exhibits and everything. It takes quite a while. They come down a lot faster than the exhibits go up, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm sure. And if you've got a lot of orchids to get out of there just to get them all properly covered and so forth, it's bound to take a lot of time. And that's a free event with a lot of, there's workshops and
raffles.
raffles,
auctions going on. We got seminars. We got new for this year is with the Kids Corner put on by the Girl Scout Troop 8268. They're going to have a real bunch of fun things going on for the youngsters, so bring your youngsters, and face painting and games and scavenger hunt and learning how to sort orchids by color and variety and coloring books and so on. So, yeah, that's going to be fun. That was implemented by one of our guild members this year, and she spent a lot of effort on that, and it's going to be a great attribute to the whole weekend.
Well, and the best part for me is just going and seeing the orchids and smelling them.
Indeed. Indeed.
Gary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today about orchids with our guest, Chuck Aker. Chuck's a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids and produces new hybrids. He'll be at Orchid Quest. He's giving a couple of talks, and there'll be many others as well. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about orchids on Garden Talk today with our guest, Chuck Aker. He's a breeder of Phragmopedium orchids, produces new hybrids for sale to commercial growers as well as home hobbyists. And his business is called Flasks by Chuck. So, are you an orchid grower, or would you like to be one? If you R1, what varieties do you like? What questions do you have about keeping them healthy? Maybe you're interested in some of the history of orchids. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, Chuck, you got a chance to see the photo from an email that Bob in Watertown emailed us, a photo of the orchid that took on a whole new life after following your instructions and advice from last year's program. That is a beautiful orchid.
Yeah, Larry had a chance to show me that during the break, and oh my gosh, I applaud him for his achievement there. Not necessarily just from my advice, but he did a lot there. He followed, and it rewarded him. An absolutely gorgeous phalaenopsis with the arching spike, large flowers, presented itself perfectly like a greenhouse-grown plant. I just was, wow, that's that's really nice to see.
Yeah, it is indeed, and I want to tell you, thanks a lot, by the way, Bob in Watertown, for sending that photo. I really appreciate it. And again, you can email us, too, with your questions at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Chris did email to ask how to feed orchids. And what's the best fertilizer to use?
Yeah, great question as well. Fertilizing is important. You know, orchids don't get a lot of nutrients from, you know, the bark-based mix especially. As bark decomposes, it actually is denitrifying, so it's consuming some of those nutrients that the plant's going to want, so there's some competition there. The best way to fertilize your orchids is, you know, get a water-soluble type of fertilizer. Typically something that's balanced, like a 10-10-10 or 15-15-15, something of that sort. You know, Miracle-Gros work really well. To be honest with you, they're not that fussy with what to use. It's mainly don't overfeed them. Follow the directions of your dilution ratios and kind of deviate down from that. Because the overfeeding is, again, one of the things I think people do a little bit more, like overwatering. So more is not better. And, you know, if your plant is growing okay, whatever you're doing obviously is good. But there's been a lot of cases where the roots have been damaged and burnt or just severely rotted out from, you know, too much salts from the high fertilizing levels. There is a little bit of correlation between what type of water you use and what type of fertilizer you use. A lot of people have been starting to use reverse osmosis water for their orchids, which they really love, by the way. Orchids do really well with a low mineral water. So many of our houses now are, you know, we have these small reverse osmosis systems plumbed in for, you know, making your coffee and your tea or for the drinking water in at one faucet or another. Orchids just really, really love these low mineral waters. You can save rainwater, melt snow. It's basically the same thing. But when you're using a water source of such, it is important to select the fertilizer that is blended for that type of water. And that is a fertilizer that's going to have a higher level of calcium and magnesium, because in this reverse osmosis rainwater situation, there's little to no nutrients. So these fertilizers need to be, you know, specifically blended. There is a brand that the Michigan State University came up with, and it's actually just called RO Water Special, Reverse Osmosis Water Special. And it does have the added CalMag to it. So if you're using just basic tap water or well water, then you can just go pretty much over-the-counter, you know, garden fertilizer like I mentioned earlier.
Aaron emailed. He's a guy that picks up garbage in front of folks' homes, you know, I suppose once a week or whatever, as it goes. And he loves to rescue plants.
Cool.
If he sees one, he grabs it off, and over time, he's rescued 6 orchids.
Nice.
And he's had good luck with every one of them. But one that he found, it had 2 new leaves, and they were very purple. And is that normal, purple leaves?
Well, typically not. Some varieties will get that, it's called the anthocyanin, will come through the leaf pigment. And it's basically a defense mechanism to the plant for a high light situation. So apparently that plant might have been put in an extremely bright, sunny location that it shouldn't have been put in. It wasn't that type of orchid. That's one thing that we see that'll come from. And, you know, it can also be a nutritional issue as well, but typically it's a high light issue, and it'll grow out of that. That'll go away, and subsequently the next leaf will come out, you know, properly colored, like, you know, your green and so on. But that's typically what we see that coming from.
It's funny because we also had a lady who walks around her neighborhood, I suppose, in the summer or whatever in the growing season, and saves orchids. If she sees one, you know, the neighbor's throwing it away or something, she grabs it, takes it home, and nurses it back to health. So yeah. There's another person doing it.
Yeah, that's great. I love to hear stories like that. You know, you can probably sit outside some of the big box stores and go dumpster diving, too. Not that I recommend that, but yeah, that's really great. I mean, everybody started to handle the orchid like a disposable flowering plant, you know, the Phalaenopsis especially, because they are so affordable. You do get your money's worth out of them, even if you don't keep it to reflower. I mean, people are treating them like a poinsettia or an Easter lily. I mean, nobody keeps those around to bloom them over and over again. So, you know, for $12 or $15 or $20, you know, you get your Phalaenopsis, you bloom it for 4, 5, 6 months or whatever. Many cases, they'll bloom twice a year if they're, you know, cared for properly and follow the instructions on the guild website that I have printed out there. But yeah, you just throw it out, buy another one. You know?
Well, but it also tells me that, I mean, we tend to think of orchids as being dainty and so forth, and they're really, sounds like to me, if you've listened to the last 2 people I talked about, that their orchids are pretty resilient.
Yeah, you can imagine. You know, like I said earlier, it's a wonder that they survive in their natives, and it's even more of a wonder that they can reproduce, you know, by seed, if you actually, you know, knew what has to happen to get an orchid to seed to germinate and culture it along. But, yeah, they have been evolved to be survivors for the most part. And, you know, that's why there's so many different species all over the world. They have, you know, adapted to the conditions and reproduced. And, it's a real testament that orchids do thrive on neglect. And I used to say that to customers all the time, don't pamper your orchid too much.
You know, I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad. I had some really good friends, Albert and Gail Mahabir, down there. I worked with Albert in the studio, but they had a couple of really nice trees, and they loved orchids, and they had orchids growing in those trees.
Oh, yeah.
And they were absolutely gorgeous, and I'm telling you, in the rainy season, they get beat on pretty darn hard.
Yeah.
And they were pretty darn resilient, if you ask me.
Yeah, and then on the flip side of that, during the dry season, you know, they're getting just the opposite. They're going, you know, weeks and weeks or even months without any moisture. And, you know, having a pseudobulb that many epiphytic orchids do have, you know, that's their water and nutrient-storing organ of the plant that keeps them alive for these periods where they don't get rain and so on for months on end. And being an epiphyte, they're able to only take what water they need because they're out in the air like that. The water will run by the roots and, you know, they're not actually planted in anything, so the water just runs by and the plant takes what it wants when it wants. And definitely, it's amazing.
Those are some of the most beautiful orchids I ever saw. Were just growing in Albert and Gail's tree.
Yeah,
the two trees.
It's great to see that. You know, you can go down to Florida and see a lot of that as well. But anytime you're out in some place that's a little bit more tropical, seek out places like that. And you know, you can do that right here at Olbrich as well. You can orchids in the trees here and there.
Yeah, let's talk about that a bit because they have a kind of a special project other than Orchid Quest, or in addition to the Orchid Quest show. Talk about what they're doing there with orchids.
Yeah. The whole month of February coming up, Olbrich Gardens in the conservatory is having what they call an orchid extravaganza, I guess. And they have orchids coming in from all over the country, you know, different varieties, and they're setting up these very elaborate exhibits with these flowering orchids all over inside the conservatory. I took part in it last year and walked through there, and I was very impressed. Many, many different varieties and the artisticness of how they have them displayed and mounted. They arches that go over your head and down in, you know, the water and in the trees and all kinds of things in there. It's very, very well done, and that will go on the whole month. And then after that, the plants are removed, and they're put up for sale through Olbrich Gardens. And from what I understand, members of the Olbrich Gardens get, you know, first dibs for a few days on selecting or purchasing these plants. And then after that, it's opened up through their website, I believe. There would maybe Larry even knows more about that since he's a member. But yeah, it's really interesting to get into the conservatory, and the whole month of February, this is going to go on.
That conservatory is just a fun place, and that'll be going on during Orchid Quest itself, then.
Correct. Yes, they'll open that up the February 1st, so that coincides. And I'm not sure how many years they've been doing this now, but the last year was really extravagant. There was hundreds of orchids in there. Just absolutely stunning exhibits. So,
yeah.
I highly recommend it. Go see it.
Well, just going to the conservatory itself is worth the effort. I always have told my students one of the cheapest dates you can have in the world, maybe a good first date, would be to take your date to the conservatory. I think it's, I don't remember, it was like $2 or something to get in. And walk around on a couple of different levels. And
yes.
And so the month of February, we got Valentine's Day coming in there.
There you go. Yep. And from what I understand, they're having twice as many orchids in this orchid extravaganza this year. that they had last year. So
I'll be over there.
I can't wait to see it myself.
So yeah.
If that says anything.
Tom in Glendale has something for us. Let's go there. Tom, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of comments. First off, one is you had mentioned before about people not keeping their poinsettias in that. I'm actually in my dining room looking at my wife's poinsettia, which has been going for years.
Yeah, I knew that'd come back and get me.
Oh, yeah. And I have done the same thing in rescuing orchids, basically from stores that have pushed them off to the side because they are no longer saleable.
Yes.
But I brought rescued a couple as well. But yes. My real question is, it's actually two. One is, I do pretty well. I have about 20 or so orchids, and the Phalaenopsis are easy, but when I get to certain orchids like Oncidiums where they have the pseudobulb, they just don't do well. Right now I'm looking at one that has five flowers and only one leaf left, but it's got a bunch of probably a dozen pseudobulbs that have lost their leaf, and I don't know, is it too much water, not enough water? They normally sit, I got a humidifier that goes on for about 20 minutes twice a day to help with that. It's in a easterly window. I'm not sure what I'm doing. It does flower, but it certainly doesn't seem happy.
Yeah, it does flower. It's hanging on. They're not great-looking plants, even when they are great-looking. But, losing your leaves on that, do you repot it every year?
I do not.
Okay, Oncidiums love to be repotted every year. They have a crazy growth habit where the pseudobulbs tend to rise up out of the pot, and, you know, the air roots are out there getting little to no nutrients, and, you know, they'll hang on like that. They won't do well, but they're kind of a pickle in that respect because they do need to have that extra attention to the repotting process almost annually to get the plant positioned in the pot properly so the new bulb, the new pseudobulb, is as close to the potting mix as possible. So when the roots come out from there, they go into the mix and get nutrients. And the other thing with the Oncidian, the whole Oncidianae family, they like a lot of light. They'll do better in a brighter window than that east window is providing. I would step up the light level if you can, and then put it outside for the summer too, semi-shaded area, you know, underneath loosely leafed trees and things like that. They'll take a lot of light. They're light lovers, and they'll make a nice pseudobulb for you during their growing season, and once that pseudobulb is mature, the bloom spike comes up out, and I hope you can save it.
Yeah, I hope so too, Tom. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. Back to water for a minute, because Cheryl in Superior emailed, she uses distilled water because she has a water softener. Is this a correct way of watering?
Well, there's some issues with the distilled water. It gets a little pH sensitive. It is very pure, much like the reverse osmosis water is, but it's developed differently, and so the properties are different. It has very little to no buffer to it, so it can get quite acidic. I don't actually recommend that, but if it's working for her, hallelujah. But you do have to make sure that you're supplementing some nutrients with a fertilizer that is blended for, you know, the pure water types like that as well. The Michigan State University fertilizer is a ratio 13-3-15, it's called, easily found online through Amazon and so on. That's the fertilizer you're probably going to want to use for those pure water sources like that.
And what's that one called again from Michigan State?
They call it Reverse Osmosis Special, RO Water Special. They also make one for well water, which combats the higher calcium and higher pH of the well water that's found in our part. But their development of this 13-3-15 for pure water sources was really instrumental in working with these pure water sources that many of us are using now, especially, you know, commercial growers.
Aaron emailed back to ask you to talk about the self-cloning orchid called keiki.
The keiki, yes.
Keikis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, keiki is a Hawaiian term for baby, and Phalaenopsis have a tendency to produce the small plantlet keiki up on the flower stem at one of those nodules or nodes, as they're known as. And back to when I mentioned earlier getting a Phalaenopsis to bloom twice a year, if you follow the instructions posted on the guild's website on the Phalaenopsis, you can often crop these stems back when the flowers have expired to 1 inch above the third node. So you'll count these little nodes or connections on that stem from the bottom up. Count 1, 2, 3, go an inch above that third. Make your nice clean cut with a sharp razor blade or knife. And sometimes you'll get a little plantlet. 9 times out of 10, you get another flower spike, which is what you want. But when you do get the little plantlet, that's kind of cool because it is actually an identical copy of the mother plant. Just wait till it actually makes its own little root system up there. You'll get 2 or 3 little roots shooting out of that little plantlet, and that's when you can cut it off and put it in a small pot, you know, 2-inch, 3-inch pot, whatever it takes to accommodate those roots, and continually repot it up to, you know, when it gets mature, it'll start to flower, and you'll have an exact copy of your mother plant.
As we're down here, we've got just a couple of minutes left, and I wouldn't mind you talking and reviewing for people the Orchid Quest, a big event at Olbrich Gardens, because it's coming up on the 4th and the 5th of February.
Yes, yes, 10 to 4 on Saturday, 10 to 3 Sunday. It's free. I mean, that's the best thing about it. You can walk in. We got plant vendors, supply vendors, raffles, auctions. Lots of seminars going on starting Saturday at 1:30. I'll be doing an open forum question and answer, 12:30. Did I say 1:30 or 11:30? So 11:30, I do the open forum. 12:30, guild members doing an orchid repotting thing. 1:30, Professor Jeff Bayless is going to do a really great program on sex and the singular orchid. And at 2:30, some more guild members are going to do an open panel discussion. Really great question and answer type of thing. Sunday, I'm doing one on orchid corsage and the Renaissance. And then 1 o'clock on Sunday, we have Ken Cameron. He's speaking on his awesome program of orchid conservation and climate change in the upper Midwest. And then also, again, we have the Kids Corner this year put on by the Girl Scout troop. Lots of activities there. Orchid scavenger hunt for the kids and sorting orchids by color and variety. They had games and everybody gets ribbons for the winners. This goes on all day, Saturday and Sunday. And then in addition to that, on Saturday from 11 to 2, the Girl Scouts, actually not a Girl Scout, there'll be a separate entity doing orchid face painting on the kids. So that'll be kind of fun to see that floating around and the kids with their orchids on their cheeks.
It's always a lot of fun, and even though the event is free, I recommend bringing your credit card anyway.
And a camera.
And a camera.
And a camera.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy it a lot, and you may walk out of there with either a new orchid or maybe something that goes along with it, because I'm pretty sure like fertilizers and that sort of thing are sold there as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. You have questions about these things we talked about with different types of fertilizer, this is the place to get the answers.
Chuck, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to another visit.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Larry.
Chuck Aker, he breeds Phragmopedium orchids and produces new hybrids as well. And his website's flasksbychuckaker.com. Well, thanks so much for listening. Here we are at the end of our work week, but we'll talk Monday about the Clean Energy Community Initiative. At 11, then 11:45, our weather guys are back to talk about why it's important to track where lightning does and doesn't hit. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.